Angie's List is now Angie, your home for everything home. Angie still has the same top pros and reviews you've counted on for more than 20 years, only now you'll also get access to all the tools you need to make your home a happy place. Inside, outside, big or small, Angie helps you find the right solution for whatever you need done, all from your phone. It's simple to find upfront pricing and instantly book hundreds of projects. You can even search pricing guides to see what others paid for similar jobs and easily compare quotes from top local pros to make sure you're getting a fair price. From lawn care to repairing the AC to the project of your dreams, Angie has your home projects handled from start to finish. Plus, when you book and pay through Angie, they'll cover your project up to the full purchase price plus limited damage protection with their happiness guarantee. Make your home an Angie home. Check out Angie.com today. And for more on the happiness guarantee, go to Angie.com/happiness-guarantee.htm. Angie's List is now Angie, your home for everything home. Angie still has the same top pros and reviews you've counted on for more than 20 years, only now you'll also get access to all the tools you need to make your home a happy place. Inside, outside, big or small, Angie helps you find the right solution for whatever you need done, all from your phone. It's simple to find upfront pricing and instantly book hundreds of projects. You can even search pricing guides to see what others paid for similar jobs and easily compare quotes from top local pros to make sure you're getting a fair price. From lawn care to repairing the AC to the project of your dreams, Angie has your home projects handled from start to finish. Plus, when you book and pay through Angie, they'll cover your project up to the full purchase price plus limited damage protection with their happiness guarantee. Make your home an Angie home. Check out Angie.com today. And for more on the happiness guarantee, go to Angie.com/happiness-guarantee.htm.
Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, I continue my 11-year anniversary extravaganza with three more stories from the last 11 years. The first story is from author and thinker Kelly Carlin.
Griffin, Leif, and I settled into Leif's Beamer for the ride out to Malibu. Griffin suggested we stop at his dealer's house to pick up some blow on the way. There I was, queen of my world. I'm riding on a wave of destiny.
And you'll hear about comedian Sam Morril and how he got duped.
She looks beautiful again. She's very pretty, and we go up to the apartment. The apartment is not much decorated. It almost looked like a porno set. There was a leather couch and a bottle of Japanese scotch. And then she just starts kissing me, and all of a sudden, before I know it, she's going down on me.
And then you'll hear an outrageous story from music producer David Wilde about his Bad Moon Dance with Van Morrison.
Van comes off stage, and Van looked at me, ran the other way, and that was my introduction to Van Morrison. And I was like, what the fuck just happened? And so that was the beginning. The manager said, Van, this is David Wilde, who you're going to talk to. Van started to shake my hand. And when I say start, I mean we went up in the shake, and but before it could go down, he darts into the hallway, runs away from me, mid-shake.
Today on the show, I continue my 11-year extravaganza with fabulous stories from Kelly Carlin, Sam Morril, and David Wilde. Stay close.
Hey, it's Kelly Carlin, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Hey, it's Sam Morril, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Hi, it's David Wilde wishing Storyworthy happy birthday.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Today, I'm playing part three of my anniversary extravaganza, bringing back 11 of my favorite stories over the last 11 years. And today on the show, you're going to hear three more fantastic stories, and I can't wait for you guys to hear them. But before the stories, I wanted to remind you that Story Smash, the storytelling game show, will be back at the Hollywood Improv this fall. I don't have dates yet, but check out storysmashshow.com for all the updated information, and you can always follow Story Smash over at Instagram at Story Smash. I'm so happy to be celebrating my 11-year podcast anniversary, and I look forward to going to Podcast Movement next month in Nashville, Tennessee. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but it's a big podcasting convention is what it is. So all of us tech nerds meet in a city once a year. Of course, last year was canceled because of COVID, but this year it's back. It's in Nashville, and it should be a lot of fun. I look forward to it. It's in that big Opryland hotel. You familiar with that, you guys? It's called the Gaylord. It has an indoor, like, rainforest. I don't know how to explain it, but it's just this massive, you know, indoor display of plants. I've been there. All right. Okay. Now we know. So anyway, you guys, thank you again so much for your support over the years. Thanks for joining my mailing list, which you can do at storyworthypodcast.com. And thanks for buying tickets to my shows and giving me all this support and this love and following me on socials and all that. I really enjoy being, being of service. Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm giving service. I'm not sure about that. But yeah, I love podcasting. I really do. And you guys are out there and you're listening and you write to me. And therefore, you know, it makes it worth it is what I'm saying. So thank you again. And remember, you can always email me, you guys, at christineblackburn1@gmail.com. How about that? All right, you guys, first up today is author and thinker and life coach Kelly Carlin. She is such an amazing woman. She, of course, is known for her book, A Carlin Home Companion, Growing Up with George. And this is a story that specifically makes me laugh because, you know, I grew up in Pittsburgh. And when you grew up, you know, wherever you guys live, don't you think of like Malibu and Hollywood kids and, you know, what was that like or what would that be like? And this story from Kelly really sums up her life growing up in Los Angeles, and it's pretty darn cool. So enjoy this story, you guys, wherever you are. Put your hands together for the very talented Kelly Carlin.
It was July of 1981. I was 18 and had just graduated high school from Crossroads, a very small private school in Santa Monica that was made up of, for the most part, Ivy League-bound, very stone children of famous people. I was one of them. However, unlike most of my peers who were spending their summer preparing for their future, I was trying to undo my past. I spent most of my days trying to extricate myself emotionally and physically from my ex-boyfriend, a drop-dead, gorgeous, blue-eyed boy named Terry. For 2 years, he had been my soulmate, but now I wanted my soul back. The reason why I was staying away from him was because one minute he was cute, funny, smart guy who was my soulmate, and then the next minute he would grab my arm really hard, call me a whore, and tell me to shut the fuck up. While most girls my age were worrying about what to wear to the prom, I was worrying about whether what I was wearing to the prom would cover my bruises. At 17, I'd become Farrah Fawcett in the burning bed, twitching at the slightest movement of his hand and feeling like I was trapped forever. And nobody knew. It had been my sick little secret for almost 2 straight years. Luckily, I did not have to turn violent like Farrah to get out of the cycle. I just finally told my parents, and that was that. Well, almost. In some ways, I did try to move on from Terry. I did date other guys for a while, but then I would break down, think about those gorgeous blue eyes, and go traipsing back in hope that he had changed. And he never did. So by this time, in the summer of 1981, I now knew it was time to move on forever. I was going to take care of myself, be more mature, and hang with a fresh group of friends. So I decided one night to hang out with Griffin O'Neill and Leif Garrett. Griffin, Tatum's brother and Ryan's son, and Leif, the Tiger Beat pop star who only a few years earlier had been the heartthrob of every 13-year-old girl in America, were what I would call part of the Beverly Hills High crowd. You know, they were somewhat out of my incestuous Crossroads group of friends, so to me, it was like a new beginning and a move towards a healthier life. Thinking back on it now, I must admit that I have no idea how I ended up by myself hanging out with these two guys, but I could guess that we had partied together with a bunch of people the night before, and that in the morning the three of us had nowhere to go and nothing to do, so we probably decided to keep the party going the next morning. That seemed to be an important activity back then. keeping the party going. What I do remember about how the day started was being in Leif's 730i Beamer going east on Sunset and following Griffin in his little blue and white Mini Cooper original. There had been a very rare rain shower that morning, and the road was slick with water and oil. At the light at Roscommere at Bel Air, Griffin rolled down his window and shouted, "Watch this!" The light turned green, and we followed Griffin off the line and approached the big, wide turn at UCLA. As we made our way around the bank, Griffin, who was about three car lengths ahead of us, pulled his emergency brake and began a slow, ballet-like spinning around the corner. I watched in horror, disbelief, and awe as he spun around in that little car, somehow not hitting anything, while scaring the shit out of everyone within a few car lengths of him. Leif and I looked at each other and rolled our eyes, and yet I couldn't help laughing and somewhat admiring Griffin and his insanity. He was poetic chaos in motion. So much for trying to take care of myself and being more mature, but hey, at least I was not in Griffin's car. I had learned enough not to be in the car with the crazy guy. I was safe in Leif's car. Then Leif casually mentioned that a few years before, while high on Quaaludes, he had had a horrible accident that left his best friend paralyzed. But Leif said that he had grown from that experience and that he was much more careful now about driving and getting high. I was relieved to hear this, since we all had decided to be sensible that morning and not do lewds and just a few bong hits before hitting the road. Leif, Griffin, and I ended up at an arcade in Westwood. Day turned to night, and around 7 p.m., my ex-boyfriend Terry showed up. He was also friends with Griffin and Leif, so I figured that one of them must have told him that we were there. They didn't know our secret history. So we all hung out playing Asteroids, Missile Command, Pac-Man. As time passed, I could feel that pull between Terry and I wake up in me. God, it was crazy. But it had a mind of its own. It was as powerful as the gravitational pull of the sun. I suddenly found myself needing him, wanting him, and then thankfully remembering the hell that he always put me through. I knew I had to stop this insanity. I knew that I had to figure out a way to cut it, to finally sever it once and for all. I had to sleep with Leif Garrett. It must happen. I was going to break the gravitational pull of Terry by sleeping with Leif Garrett. In that moment, it felt like time stood still, and the universe had aligned itself with me in my overall purpose to break away from Terry and grow up. It was destiny. In that moment, I had turned the corner from being a girl who looked for men to define her to a young woman wanting to put a notch in her bedpost. Such loud and clear. God, men are easy. Oh, but even better, Terry got the message, too. Griffin, Leif, and I settled into Leif's Beamer for the ride out to Malibu. Griffin suggested we stop at his dealer's house to pick up some blow on the way. There I was, queen of my world. I'm riding on a wave of destiny. I am woman, hear me roar. I popped in the new Steely Dan tape as we wound our way on Sunset through the Palisades. Drive west on Sunset to the sea. Turn that jungle music down just until we're out of town. This is no one night stand. It's a real occasion. Yes, it is. Yes, it is indeed. We eventually make it to the Boo. Ryan and Farrah are out of town somewhere, so we have full access to everything. I walk in and see the Wall of Farrah that I'd heard so much about. It is a 30-foot wall covered in pictures of Farrah in every imaginable size. I am in awe of it all, and I know that this is a huge moment for me. Later on, Leif and I are playing footsie in the jacuzzi, and Griffin is beginning to pout. At some point, he pulls me aside to tell me that he's worried about me and doesn't want me doing anything crazy. The champagne nearly shoots out of my nose. He warns me that Leif wants to have sex with me, but that he probably doesn't want it to be anything serious. He is afraid that Leif is just going to use me. How sweet. Griffin is protecting me from Leif. I think, see, these boys are much nicer than the ones I used to hang out with. Eventually, Griffin crashes and Leif and I barely make it to the couch. I will spare you the gory details of what followed next, but I must say that there is not much to spare you from. Even though I was only 18 and Leif was only the third guy I'd ever been with, there was one thing I knew on that night. He was clearly not made for dancing all night long. It was the worst sex I'd ever had. If I could just save one woman from one disappointment in life, I hope that it is this. That sleeping with a pop star is not any way as thrilling as thinking about sleeping with a pop star. So do yourself a favor and satisfy yourself while you keep on fantasizing about Bono, Sting, whoever. You'll get a hell of a lot more bang for your buck that way. Trust me. The next morning, not wanting Griffin to find us on the couch, Leif and I found our way upstairs and into Ryan and Farrah's bed. Here, in the daylight, with most of the drugs having worn off, we met each other in a different place. And yes, Leif found a way to redeem himself from the night before. Afterward, as we lay there on Ryan and Farrah's bed, I just had to laugh to myself and take in the moment. I mean, it was a surreal one for sure. I mean, I may have grown up as the daughter of George Carlin and had many a brush with fame, but nothing could probably top having sex with Leif Garrett in Ryan O'Neill and Farrah Fawcett's bed. Or so I thought. 10 minutes later, Leif and I found our way into their shower. As I began to let the water pour over me, I asked Leif to hand me some shampoo. And he did. Farrah Fawcett's shampoo. No, I mean it. It was Farrah Fawcett brand shampoo. Farrah fucking Fawcett shampoo. And there I was, washing my hair next to Leif Garrett with Farrah Fawcett shampoo under Farrah's faucet.
Wasn't that great? Did I tell you? Yes? I knew you'd love it. That's just such a great story, going down Sunset, and then when she sings that little part. I just adore Kelly Carlin, and I hope you guys enjoyed that story. All right, you guys, this next story comes from comedian Sam Morell, and he is doing so well. I'm sure you guys know that. If you are at all involved in the stand-up comedy world or you like comedy, then you'll know Sam Morell is doing just great. He's out there on the road constantly. He's doing tons of dates. And this particular story he told to me in October of 2018. And I got to tell you, I did not see it coming. So I don't want to tell you guys too much because I don't want to give anything away. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Sam Morell.
All right. So we're talking about getting duped. This is how this story started. I had just had a breakup with a girl. This is many years ago now. And I had not been on many dates. I met a girl online. I met her, I think it was OkCupid. And she somehow was better looking than the pictures, which is like, when the hell does that ever happen? You know, she's like, I was like, wow, she's gorgeous. And the day, the way I tell it, I'm like, we got drunk. I think I got drunk. I think it was more me than her. But we had some drinks. It was like a weird bar in Brooklyn. And the night went on. And I remember it was like a cold New York winter. And as we walked outside, I remember her being very proper, and as I hugged her goodbye, I gave her a big kiss, and as I let her go, she went, "Oh my, I didn't expect that." And I was like, "All right, well," I was hammered, so I said, "Well, you better expect it." And then I never heard from her again. I was like, "Well, that was probably deserved, you know." That was that. And you know, I was like, "Wow, I didn't play that right." Like sometimes I just revisit things I've said at the end of dates, and I'm like, "Why are you so stupid?" And I remember months go by, I messaged her like once or twice and she didn't get back. And I was like, well, I guess that's that, you know, that's just how it goes. And I'm a little fresh out of a breakup. Maybe my game's not, you know, on point right now. So I remember months later, I get a text from her, "Where are you?" And I said, "I'm in Union Square. What's up?" And she said, I want to get freaky with you. That's what she wrote. And I was like, is this a practical joke? In my head, it's so out of character from how she behaved on the date. So I was like, this feels like a practical joke. And I don't know how to respond to that. I'm not used to getting texts like that. So I just said, "Oh, yeah?" with a question mark. That's what I wrote back. And she wrote back, "Do you want to get your dick sucked or not?" So the way I tell it is that I excuse myself from lunch with my parents. That's who I was. And I'm like, I don't buy that it's her. It feels so out of character. It feels like I'm going to get robbed. Like it's a setup to get robbed. Like someone stole her phone and this is how he's scrolling through the most vulnerable idiots in her message book. And I call and she said, "It's me. I've had a bad week at work. I want to see you and I want to fuck you." And I said, okay. You know, I'm kind of sounds all right to me. So I write back. I go back to lunch with my mom and dad. This is a weird way to go back. And I say, "Mom, I got to go. An audition just came up for." And I'm always remember my mom said. She said, "Go get him, Sammy." And I was like, "Ugh, I am not a good person. I just lied to my mother's face in pursuit of sex or oral sex. Who knows what's going to happen?" So as I'm leaving, my dad's like, you know, does a goodbye wave. I call my friend Rachel Feinstein, who's, you know, a comic and one of my best friends for many years now. And Rachel, I was working on a show with her at the time. She was developing something. I don't remember what it was, but I called her and said, "Hey, it's a little weird. There's a few red flags about this. You know, it's a different apartment than when I dropped her off after the date. But, you know, it's New York. People sublet all the time." I'm like maybe this is called blowjob rationale, sex rationale. I say blowjob because in the message, she actually said, "Do you want to get your dick sucked or not?" That's when I left. And I was like, well, that was aggressive, but let me see what this is. And there's like red flags, but I'm also kind of like in a weird place at this time in my life. Like I got dumped by someone who I love very much. And I just was like, let me just live an adventure, I guess. That was kind of where my mind was at. I see that you're like, what is going to happen? So I call Rachel and she is just like, "This girl sounds unstable. What the hell is wrong with you?" And I was like, "I don't know. I don't know why I'm doing this, but I'm doing this. I'm going to do it." And she said, "I hate that you're doing this. Just give me the address so I know who you are so nothing happens." Rachel's like a sister to me. I mean, we're like very close. And, you know, she said, "Just if something happens, and call me afterwards." And I said, "All right, fine." So I go, and it's like a nice luxury apartment in Williamsburg. It's kind of shady to me. And I text her. I'm like, "Can we just have a drink downstairs first?" And I know this like dive bar right by there called Turkey's Nest, which I kind of like. And I was like, "Well, this will take the edge off." And she said, "No, I have scotch upstairs. Come up." And I said, "Okay." And she comes downstairs to get me because I think she could tell I was a little nervous. And she looks beautiful again. She's very pretty. And we go up to the apartment. The apartment is not much decorated. It almost looked like a porno set. It was there was a leather couch and a bottle of Japanese scotch. That's all I remember. And being like, "Well, this is a little strange." She pours me a scotch. I take a sip. She pours me another scotch. I start drinking it. And then she just starts kissing me. And all of a sudden, before I know it, she's going down on me. And then she stops and she said, "I really hope my roommate doesn't catch us." And I was like, "Yeah, I also hope that doesn't happen. Let's go to your bedroom." And she goes, "No, I want him to catch us." And that's probably when I should have left. And I do this on stage and I say, "Unfortunately, I was with my penis at the time." And that guy's persuasive. So we go to the bedroom and she continues right where she left off. All of a sudden, like 30 seconds later, the door swings open. There's a guy standing right there. He's in a tank top. He's kind of jacked. He's all tatted up. And he's just staring at me as she's still going. And I kind of like don't know what to. In a moment of panic, I just turn to him and I go, "Can I help you?" And he goes, "Are we going to do this?" I was like, "Excuse me?" He said, "Are we going to do her?" And I said, I don't really follow. And he said, "Right now, me and you." And I said, no, I'm not that type of person. And he said, "Well," and I don't know if you've ever been terrified and still somewhat hard. It's a confusing feeling. Yeah. I didn't really know what to do in this moment. And I just said, hey, this is not right for me. And he goes, well, you're either in or you're out. And I was like, well, man, I don't know. I was so traumatized in this moment that I just kind of, I look at her for something and she gives me nothing. She's like, kind of shrugged, like, yeah, that's what I wanted to do. She kind of set me up for this. And I was like, all right. I remember just reaching. I always think, you're either in or you're out. I'm like, well, this isn't Ocean's 11. This is quite more serious than that. So I said, no, I'm not doing this. And I ran for my bag. I didn't even pull my pants up. I ran for my bag. I run out. And I'm like, what the hell just happened? Call my friend Rachel. And she's like, I'm just happy you're okay. You're an idiot. I'm mad at you. But I'm glad everything's all right. And I was like, yeah. All right. And I do this bit on stage. I do a version of it on stage. And how I end it is some truth to it. My mom called me to see how the audition went. And I said, well, Mom, more people went out for the part than I'd anticipated. And I think they're going to go with this other guy. So anyway, this was like a rude awakening. I remember I told a couple friends who are comics. And, you know, some comics are the sweetest guys and some are kind of dirtbags. And I remember telling one guy, he's like, I totally would have gone for it. And I was like, well, we're wired differently. I was scared kind of for my safety in that moment. I was like, I don't know if they were going to like rob me or something. So it was definitely a scary experience. I kind of wrote her an angry text, like, you can't do that to someone. Like, think about if I did that to you, that would be like, how horrifying that would be if a dude just came out. And she's like, you're right, I shouldn't have done that. That's what, I thought you'd be cool with it.
Oh my gosh. I thought that was such a good story, so well told, and, you know, really interesting. And by the way, Sam Morril told me this story in October of 2018. And let's say he was supposed to come over to my apartment at like, let's say noon, right? So it's 11 a.m. and I'm watching one of his specials on Comedy Central. And there's a knock at the door and it's Sam. And I'm like, hey, dude. And he goes, yo, man, I know I'm early, but I thought I'd just come over. And I'm like, sure, come on in. I'm just watching you on Comedy Central. It was really funny. Anyway, great guy and a fabulous story. Again, head over to samborel.com for more information on Sam. All right, you guys, this final story comes from music producer David Wild. David has such an incredible career. He has produced dozens and dozens of shows like, you know, the Grammys, or he'll do, you know, all of those big events that they do, you know, like a tribute to America or, you know, a tribute to this or that. And David Wild is the producer of all that stuff. He's the only guy I know who can post pictures of himself with Ringo Starr, Paul McCartney, you know, everybody. He just knows everybody. And this story is about when he was a writer for Rolling Stone magazine, and he was the person who was to interview Van Morrison, you know, musician man Van Morrison, but Van Morrison doesn't like to be interviewed. You'll see. You guys can find David Wild over there on Twitter at Wild About Music. And yeah, just a great guy. Follow David Wild, would you? All right, you guys, whoever you are, put your hands together for the very talented David Wild.
It's 1990. I'm the music editor of Rolling Stone magazine. I am 27, something like that, and arrogant, you know, with the job, because the internet hasn't come around and destroyed journalism. Being the music editor of Rolling Stone is actually an amazingly privileged position for any age, but definitely at my age. I was just not that long out of college, and I just had this crazy early luck in my career. It went to crap later. But I'm sitting in my office one day, and I get a call from Van Morrison's record company. Van had not done an interview with Rolling Stone or pretty much anybody for years. In particular, he hated Rolling Stone because, in his opinion, there had been an article that had begun with a lead that gave directions to his house. And he didn't like that, which made sense, but I don't think the article actually gave directions to his house. But I get the call saying Van has agreed to do an interview with Rolling Stone for his new greatest hits record, and he'll only do it with you, David Wild. And I was even more – I went to 5'7", based on the short joke. I felt up from 5'6". And I was thrilled. So then what proceeded to happen was in journalistic terms, just a, like Vietnam. I spent the next few weeks being told, okay, he wants you to fly to Dublin. And then they'd cancel. We'd get plane tickets. Then it was come out to L.A., cancel. Finally, I'm told, okay, Van can't wait to see you. And he will see you at the David Letterman show. He wants to really just get to know you a little bit at the David Letterman show, which then was on air. This is all those years ago. And I came down to the Letterman show, and this manager, right before he's about to introduce me to Van Morrison, says, okay, here's the deal. I'm going to tell him I went to high school with you. Just go along with that. And I went, what? And then Van comes off stage and he goes, Van, this is my friend David from high school. And Van looked at me, ran the other way, and that was my introduction to Van Morrison. And I was like, what the fuck just happened? And I so that was the beginning. Then I got a call going, oh, Van was really so happy to meet you. He really wants you to come to Boston. And I flew to Boston, checked into a great hotel because journalism in those days could pay for great hotels. Mm-hmm. So I think I was on the Four Seasons or something like that. And I'm there for the first show, for the second show, for a third show, for a fourth show. I'm seeing great shows. I'm seeing okay shows. But I'm not talking to Van Morrison. And I'm running up a tremendous amount of expense for Rolling Stone, which could sustain it. But I have nothing to show for it. Finally, it's the last show. And I go to the manager and I go, I'm leaving town. This is ridiculous. He goes, no. After the show tonight, he's going to have a fans having a party at the Hard Rock Cafe. How cool was that? he goes, you come to the party and we're going to talk. Van's going to talk to you after that. I go to the party and Van is standing by himself over a chafing dish, inhaling chicken wings and egg rolls and grease. There's no napkins anywhere. He's just like it was like he was like a starving man at a bar mitzvah. It was just I don't know what was going on. And that was the moment where the manager said, Van, this is David Wilde, who you're going to talk to. Van started to shake my hand. And when I say start, I mean we went up in the shake, but before it could go down, and I already have egg rolls and chicken wings in my hand, he darts into the hallway, runs away from me, mid-shake. And I see him, and he's sitting with standing in the hallway with Georgie Fame, who's a legendary sort of keyboardist and British musician who was in his band at the time. And I'm like, what just happened? And the manager goes, don't worry. Here's what you do. Just go out in the hall, walk back in front of Van for a little while, let him get comfortable with you. And I went, what do you mean? Should I lift my hind leg and see if Van wants to mount me? I don't know what, this is not usually how interviews go. This is, so I actually did it. I went in the hall, walking back in front, parading in front of Georgie Fame and Van Morrison. Georgie looked confused. Van looked utterly disinterested. And I said, fuck this, I'm going. And I went to the manager and I said, okay, I'm leaving. This is absurd. At which point, thank God, I guess, Peter Wolfe of the Jay Giles Band, the front man of the Jay Giles Band, was at this party. He was the only person at the party besides the band. And I knew Pete from The Office. He'd been around. He's a friend of Jan Wenner's. And I explained what was going on. And for those, a little deep rock history, Peter Wolfe was a DJ before he was like a rock star in Boston around the time that Van was of Astral Weeks, and Van spent some time in Boston. So I told him what was going on. He goes, oh, I'll fix this. I thought that was going to be easy. But he did. He walked over to Van. They talked for a few minutes, and he came back. And he went, all right, we'll have lunch then. And that was progress. That was – so the next day I didn't check out. I didn't go home. And the next day we literally reserved – we found out what Van's favorite restaurant in Cambridge was. We reserved the back room of the restaurant. We briefed the staff on not to look at him, not to talk to him. We had Matt Mahurin, who was a world famous photographer. You know, he had just done the album cover for Tracy Chapman's record. If you think of that, he's a great photographer. He was supposed to do a session with Van. He was being blown off too. So they arranged for him to be in the corner of the room, like hidden behind a curtain, so that he could try to take a picture of Van talking to me to document that this hell was really happening. So I sat there and I was kind of a little bit more into preparing then for things, and I had a list of maybe 200 questions. I was ready. It was a career retrospective, the Rolling Stone interview, which is like your life story. So I started to ask my first question. I looked up and Van was running out of the restaurant. And when I say running, I mean waddling. And I thought for a second, this is a poet, you know, as Christine was saying, one of my favorite artists of all time, someone who touches me on a spiritual level. But I realized he's also being a fucking douchebag. So I am going to chase this guy. And I grabbed my notebook and my tape recorder, which we couldn't use an iPhone back then. You know, used a big bulky tape recorder and cassettes, and I chased him through Harvard Square. So a kid in, you know, some Harvard kids probably in 1990 remember like this strange scene of like a mad butcher van running through Harvard Square, being chased by me, then being chased by Matt Mahurin with his cameras. And Van ducked into a cafe like a block and a half away, and I just sat down next to him. Like nothing had happened. And Matt Mahurin was outside the window of the restaurant. I think he was afraid of getting hurt. So he was outside the restaurant, like through the window with his camera. And I sat down and I pulled out my notebook and I asked my first question, which was, I got as far as when you. And he goes, I don't talk about my personal life. And I looked at my questions and there were about, you know, 200 about his life, or anything that could be construed as a personal life, because I had only said when you. And then I said, okay. So I looked at some album related questions and I go, on the album, he goes, I don't talk about my records. And I thought, I am fucking dealing with a crazy person. And if I'm dealing with a crazy person, how do you deal with a crazy person? I said, well, I've seen movies. I know like Judd Hirsch played a shrink in Ordinary People. I'll play shrink. And so I literally sort of sat back like I was a shrink. And I said, Van, let's talk about why you don't want to talk to me. And that was the first thing that grabbed him. He was really happy to tell me why he didn't want to talk to me. And that was the window that was all, you know, Van has a song, Cleaning Windows. That was the window I had to clean to start a conversation. And for the next hour, beginning talking about why he didn't want to talk to me, but eventually actually talking to me, he gave me what was a pretty good interview, good enough to be, you know, I'm sitting here looking at a Rolling Stone, like, greatest interviews issue. And it made even though it was only an hour and the most difficult hour probably of my professional life, he gave me an interview, and at the end of an hour, he goes, all right, then, are we good? And I went, well, we're pretty good. And he left. Cut to this manager, who I assume was a relatively new manager, called me like a few weeks later, and Van had a record coming out. I think it was not the record you love so much, but it was close to that. I think it was Hymns to the Silence. He goes, Van wanted to know if you'd write some liner notes for him. And I said, why would he ask me? He goes, he said you guys get along. And I thought, okay, this is what it means to get along well with Van. And even you mentioned the Astral Weeks show that he did. He did a little tour. And a couple of years ago, I got a call going, Van's going to do like one interview to promote this, and he'll only do it with you, David. And he said, because you guys are friends. So this is my friendship with Van Morrison. And that is my story about Van.
Is that crazy or what? Like, I feel like I can't even listen to Van Morrison music the same way. I mean, I do. I love Van Morrison, you know, of course, but it's just, he's so eclectic. I just never, I don't know. I didn't see that coming. Great story. All right, you guys. Again, thank you so much for tuning into my anniversary special today. I've really had a lot of fun bringing you 11 stories that have stood out to me over the last 11 years. And why don't you do me a favor, guys, and tell your friends about Storyworthy. Would you just tell one person, two people, 20 people, you know, whatever you're comfortable with. Tell them they can listen to Storyworthy anywhere they want for free. There is no money involved. They can even just go over to the website, storyworthypodcast.com, and they can listen right there. And also, you guys, please follow me on social media. Would you do that at Storyworthy? Particularly Twitter. That's what I like. I like the Twitter. But, you know, I do it all. What can I say? All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Kelly Carlin, comedian Sam Morrell, and music producer David Wild. The stories were just fantastic. Thank you, guys. My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
This episode is also sponsored by Zelle. Zelle is a great way to send money to family and friends no matter where they bank in the U.S. right from your banking app. Personally, I always use Zelle to pay my barber, and I use it to send him a little bit extra because, I mean, he's really getting in that scalp, and he does a really good job, and he's kind of got to wash out all those little tiny short hairs, and if you don't wash them out, then you're itchy for the rest of the day. I don't know. I feel like he deserves a little bit extra for that. It goes straight into the recipient's bank account in minutes between enrolled users. You can use it for all kinds of stuff, not just to pay your barber for putting up with you. You can send some money to your friend for his birthday because you forgot it. So if you're listening, Brian, sorry, buy yourself something nice. The best part about Zelle is you probably already have it since it's in over 1,000 banking apps. So look for Zelle in your banking app today.